I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move.
Hey, freedom, Matt Rothschild, sitting in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show with my co-host, Angela Lang of BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Angela, it's great to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Every time. Happy to do it.
I always look forward to co-hosting with you. It's always fun.
Yeah.
And I know you've been doing a little more radio on Civic Media. I heard you earlier this week on Gene Mattinair's show with Greg. You were great.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Happy to be here. It's always a good conversation, no matter who I'm with, honestly.
You're getting to be an old pro. listen, I want to tell the listeners what we got going on. We got Peter Barca, a former minority leader in the state assembly, who I knew back in the day during the Act 10 stuff. He was a leader of the Democrats and a fighter against Act 10. He's now running for Congress against Brian Stile in the first congressional district. So looking forward to speaking to him shortly after 2:30. And then Maggie herself is going to be interviewing Caitlin Henderson with Oxfam on a new report that this researcher from Oxfam just did on best and worst states to work in. And here's a spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin came in 38th. Ahead of Arkansas.
Lots to unpack there.
not something to brag about.
Not something to be proud of yet again.
And it may be that we will cut in when President Biden speaks this afternoon in Westby about funds that he's supplying for rural electrification and some serious money to help rural Wisconsin and other parts of this country with rural electrification. So if and when that happens, we will cut in for that. But in the meantime, Angela, I wanted to ask you, because you were featured in an article in the Journal Sentinel earlier this week by the wonderful Molly Beck and Rachel Hale about voter suppression in Wisconsin, specifically going back to the voter ID law in the Walker years.
Yeah, I mean, I've been organizing since 2007. I've gotten my start. I consider myself, you know, a veteran of student organizing. And I remember one of the first big issues I started organizing around was student IDs for voter IDs. And this was back when now Judge John Richards was a state rep at the time. And I went to UWM. And it's so interesting that so many, many years later, we're still having the same type of conversations. And I appreciate this piece being able to talk about like how difficult it can be for voters, whether it's photo ID or the fact that, you know, the Black polling place on the north side of Milwaukee early vote site had to be the one to get moved, all of these different challenges. And, you know, I'm glad we're talking about it. I'll also, you know, talk about, too, is that there are times when there's felony disenfranchisement. And so for those that don't know, if you've gone through the criminal justice system, have, you know, are on probation or on supervision, you don't have your voting rights restored yet. But when you are off supervision, they're restored. And a lot of times people don't know that. And people are scared to vote because they make a big deal saying, if you vote, you know, you're a felon, you can no longer vote. And so people remove themselves from that process because they don't always know when their voting rights are restored until someone like, you know, one of our ambassadors at BLOC tells them that. So all these different ways in the intersections that all these other challenges and obstacles and systems of oppression, including the mass incarceration system, also being a part of voter suppression.
Yeah, I mean, the combination of mass incarceration and felon disenfranchisement is a really nasty 1-2 punch. And Wisconsin's fallen way behind. There are a whole bunch of other states that allow former prisoners to vote once they get out behind bars. In fact, Minnesota, under Governor Walz, just got that to happen over the last couple of years. And actually, in two states, you can vote from behind bars.
Yeah.
In Maine and in Vermont. That's the little quiz of the day. I gave the answer. But here in Wisconsin, you can't vote until you are not only outside of the prison gates, but you're off paper, as it's called.
Yeah.
And off paper can mean 2 years, 4 years, 8 years. I've talked to a former prisoner who was 15 years on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just shocking that, you know, they've already paid the huge price of losing their freedom for several years, and then they can't vote for you know, more than a decade. That's wrong.
We had a woman, we have a program called the Silent Canvas, where elected officials or candidates shadow our team on doors when we ask them, you know, what does a thriving community look like? And I remember our deputy director, Keisha, she happened to be doing a silent canvas with former county executive Chris Abley. And they talked to a woman. And a lot of times people are saying, oh, I can't vote. I'm a felon. And people just say, sorry, have a nice day. And we always make sure to, you know, have a follow-up question. Don't mean to sound invasive. Do you mind me asking if you're off paper? And this woman said, oh, yeah, I'm off paper. I've been off paper for 15 years. Could have been voting that whole time. Didn't know until Keisha told her that her voting rights had been restored.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. And by off paper, we mean, you know, extended supervision, parole's done.
Yep. You don't have to report to a, you know, parole officer and stuff like that anymore. Yep.
Yeah. And there is a big movement in Wisconsin to get Wisconsin. And if we have a decent legislature after these fair maps, we may get this done, to have the legislature pass a bill that allows former prisoners to vote once they get out from behind the prison doors.
The Unlock the Vote campaign with Wisdom. They've been working out that for a very long time.
They've done a tremendous amount of work on this issue here in Wisconsin.
Very much so.
You mentioned that the so-called black site for voting in Milwaukee had moved. Where is it now, in case someone was listening to that and wondered?
Yeah, so if folks are familiar with that traditional site, it had been in the Midtown Shopping Center. And then there's a lot of drama, a lot of, you know, hiccups and whatnot with a new landlord. And so thank goodness, due to advocacy with groups like Souls to the Polls and whatnot in the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, we were able to make sure that the new location is just across the street. So it is still across, but it's on Capitol Drive. Thank goodness there's a lot of signage. You drive down Capitol, there's signs on the buildings, there's signs everywhere. So there's ample signage. And then I believe, you know, people just might have folks across the street in case people are looking for it on election day to kind of direct folks to. But it is now officially across the street. But you kind of can't miss it. Thank goodness. The signage is really, really good over there.
Because I know there was some lack of clarity for a while there about where people were supposed to vote in that area.
Yeah, yeah. And so that changed earlier this year. And I'm glad that we're talking about it, because if you hadn't voted in our three other elections, say you're only kind of a presidential general election voter and you haven't voted yet this year, you may not have gotten the memo. So there's still maybe, you know, groups of people that haven't voted this year that will be voting at that new site for the first time, potentially.
And you also mentioned student voting.
Yes.
And one of the problems of the voter ID law that when it passed, it wouldn't allow students to use their student ID as a valid ID for voting.
Yep. I mean, I remember one of the fights in the early days is that we were like, okay, if we need to find a way to use, you know, student IDs, because a lot of folks, they had their student IDs, but they were from out of town. Maybe they were from Minnesota. So the only state ID they have is from Minnesota. And in order to get a new ID, they would have to surrender that. A lot of college students weren't, but they were living on campus for a year or longer. And so we were like, can we make the student IDs compliant? Can we add a picture and an expiration date, trying to have that work around? But yeah, it continues to be an issue for folks. And I think it's just another way. It's kind of like death by a thousand cuts in terms of democracy.
We've got a call from Cindy in Appleton. Cindy, are you on the line there? What's on your mind?
I am, Matt. I just wanted to go back to your incarcerated people being able to vote. I think they should, because they're still citizens. And if they're legal citizens of this country, then they should have the right to vote. They're still humans. They are still part of our society. They should have the right to vote, even if they're incarcerated, because the bulk of the people that are incarcerated in our state, especially, are mostly nonviolent criminal people. So this, to me, is just really kind of a silly thing. It's just another way to take the vote away from people.
Agreed.
Yeah, Cindy, I agree with you, too. Cindy, from Appleton, thanks so much for the call. You know, the only case I could see for not allowing someone to vote is if their actual crime was illegal voting.
Voter fraud, or, you know, being a fake elector like Bob Spindell.
Ooh. I mean, that's the only thing that would really make logical sense, to deprive them of their voting rights for doing something that had nothing to do with messing around with an election doesn't make sense to me. And yes, exactly. They're still citizens. They should be allowed to vote, just like they're allowed to vote in Maine and Vermont.
Yep.
There's, you know, why should people in Maine and Vermont have more rights than people in Wisconsin? That doesn't make sense.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Crazy. And I'm glad. Thank you for bringing that up. I think those are important points that I think people don't always think about.
And a lot of the advocates are for that, too, from, you know, in Expo and Wisdom. The first step is to try to get people their right to vote after they get outside the prison gates.
Yeah.
But I think if you talk to a lot of the advocates, everyone that I've talked to anyway agrees with you, Cindy, that people from behind bars should still be able to vote if they're citizens of this country.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of issues that they're dealing with in there are political issues. Look at Wisconsin. Look at the prison problems we're having in Wisconsin. Why shouldn't the people most adversely affected by that be able to weigh in if there's someone running who wants to clean up our prison system here?
Yeah.
Or let people go who've served, good time and or are, very old. I mean, how many prisoners in Waupun are older than 90 is what I want to know. And why don't you let all those people out? They did a little bit of that during COVID.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like there was a crime spree afterwards. So there's just so many problems with our prison system. And depriving prisoners of the right to vote, to express themselves on this crucial issue of their own living conditions, is outrageous. I interviewed someone who was representing the Waupun area, or I read about this person, I can't remember which, and this person was representing two-thirds of the people in Waupun, and those people couldn't vote. He was representing all the people in Waupun. They amounted to two-thirds of his constituents, and two-thirds of his constituents couldn't vote, and he'd never been in Waupun. He'd never visited the prison.
And don't get me started on prison gerrymandering, right? We could talk more about that maybe after the break. And I would also be remiss to not mention that the anniversary of the 94 crime bill is actually happening next week. We actually have a team of folks that'll be going to D.C. for a march, and I think we got to think about some of those policies and kind of how we got here today and snowball, too.
I do want to pick up this conversation of prison gerrymandering. It's a concept that I only got to know about when I was over there working at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We'll explore that right after this very short bump. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in here for Maggie. And my co-host, Angela Lang from Block, is with us for the whole time today. So stay tuned.
Keep on running, 'cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here, in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin. You can join our conversation at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. I'm joined in the studio, again, by Angela Lang, who's co-hosting with me all day today, which I'm really grateful for. And we have a text from someone who writes, "My husband had no idea that he was allowed to vote because he was off paper. He cast his first vote during the last presidential election. He's 43 years old. At least he was able to cast his vote then."
Yeah, and I appreciate folks sharing those stories. And this is why things like that are important to be talking about. And don't quote me on the number, but I was just talking about this recently about the I think it's the round 20 or so thousand folks that are actually actively on paper in Wisconsin. And then you start to think of vote margins. And it's just so interesting that, like, I think the way, one of the many ways to try and kind of minimize Democratic participation is folks being able to not vote at all. And so if you just lock up enough people and take away their ability to vote, they can't even vote to change their material circumstances. And that is incredibly unfortunate. And it's heartbreaking. And it's, you know, part of me is glad that, you know, organizations like ours are getting the word out and letting folks know about it. But also at the same time, it's very sad that we have to fill in that gap.
Yeah. And I think the number of people who are who have served their time and outside the prison gates is even larger than 20,000. The number that sticks in my mind is 60,000.
Yeah, yeah,
I could
yeah.
be wrong.
The, yeah, Either way, like if you think of the vote margins, it's tens of thousands. Yeah.
We've got a call from Troy from Mount Horeb. Troy, what perspective do you have on this issue?
Hey, first of all, as I always say, you two should have a show.
Thanks, Troy.
Start there.
From your mouth to God's ear.
Exactly. So I'm a 16-year prison guard, and I didn't always, but I agree with you guys 100%. This is ridiculous.
And so why do you agree with us?
It just basically what you said, you know, why would you take away the people's vote just because, you know, they committed a crime, they paid their debt to society, you know, they should be able to move on. I haven't really thought about having people vote when they're in.
Sure.
But, you know, once they're out, for sure, absolutely, they should be allowed to vote.
I'm curious too, because you said being like a former correctional officer, and what was the thing that changed your mind? Because you also said, you know, I didn't always agree, and I think that, you know, until people like know folks and start to have an understanding, people may not agree with what we just said and what you agree with. I'm so curious of it. Was there an instance, or was there a person, or, you know, what was the thing that made you kind of change your mind? Or was it just kind of a broader experience and seeing it from the inside?
It'd be a broader experience. Getting out of that toxic environment changed my mind on a lot of things.
Sure.
And I voted for two Democrats from 1992 to 2010, and one of them was a friend of mine.
Sure.
So, you know, and then Scott Walker came in, and I said, okay, I'm not going to vote for any statewide Republicans because of what they did to us, but, you know, I'll still vote federally. And then, like I said, I got out of that, and, you know, my mind has changed, and Trump is awful, and my mind has just changed on a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And I think I've become a better person since my mind has changed on a lot of those things. So
thanks for sharing.
But, you know, I just like you said, and I've said this before, but I just don't think we should take away the vote from people in general.
Yeah, Troy from Mount Horeb, thanks so much for that. Calling for your unique perspective on this that we don't get to hear enough of. Really appreciate that. Angela Lang, you mentioned before the break this term prison gerrymandering. Do you want to explain that and why it's such an issue?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, so we know the census, you know, every 10 years, and that is able to, you know, bring in resources and figure out where folks, you know, population changes, and that also includes, you know, resource allocation changes. And the way folks are counted, they're not counted in their, you know, where they're home, they're counted as in, you know, the jail or the prison that they're in. And so that's also where those resources go. So you have some towns and some, you know, places who get all these resources for folks that are in jail and incarcerated. And ultimately, sometimes the whole town economy is just based around that prison. And so you see, you know, places like Milwaukee, where there's a lot of Black and brown people who have been incarcerated. Those funds and that allocation of resources and how they're even being counted isn't even being counted where they typically live.
Yeah, the more I looked at this, the more absurd it seemed. For instance, if you're a guy in Milwaukee, you're arrested and convicted, you're sent up to Waupun for maybe just a year and a half.
Yep.
And then the census counts you as being there for 10 years.
Yep.
Even if you come back to Milwaukee after your year and a half is up.
Exactly.
And so that's not right. And Milwaukee's then deprived of the resources that are allocated because of the census numbers, and Waupun is overcompensated with resources.
Yep. I mean, and we can also do, you know, a racial breakdown, right? There's a lot of Black and brown folks that tend to be incarcerated, especially in Milwaukee. 53206 is the world's most incarcerated zip code. So we see how, you know, not only the allocation of resources is unequitable, but also people's access, like I said, to change their material circumstances. They can't even have their voices heard in that process.
Yeah, that's an injustice we got to repair. And other states are doing that, too.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We're falling behind those states, too.
Yeah.
We got Mark from the SAC. Mark, always happy to hear your voice. We got about a minute, so let me know what you got.
Yeah, thanks. Part of the whole rehabilitation system for people that have been incarcerated that should be restoring their rights, including the right to vote. It should not be up to, you know, individual organizations. That the state itself or the government itself should be offering, telling people when, you know, how to reestablish themselves as have full citizenship rights. That it's sad that we have to do this. That it takes this kind of action to restore people's rights as citizens of the United States of America and restore their rights under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution as amended by the 15th, 19th, 24th, and 26th Amendments.
Thanks, Mark. I mean, we do need to restore people's rights. And to do that, we got to change the law. And to change the law, we got to elect people to the Assembly and the State Senate who will agree to do that. So you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, co-hosting here with Angela Lang. We'll be back in a minute with Peter Barco, who's running for Congress. Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin. My co-host this afternoon, as in the past, is Angela Lang from Block. Always a pleasure having you here, Angela.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Can you hear me?
And we've got Peter Barca. That's the voice of Peter Barca, who is running for Congress.
There we go. Terrific. Can you see me as well?
We sure can. Well, in the backstage area. There we go.
Great. Glad to hear it.
So
great to be with you.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Angela and Matthew.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Peter. Peter Barker, for those who don't understand, is the former minority leader in the Assembly for the Democrats and the former Secretary of Revenue in the Evers administration. Peter Barker represented southeastern Wisconsin in the House of Representatives once before, and he's running again now in the first congressional district, taking on Brian Stile. Peter Barca, tell us why you decided to run again for Congress.
Looks like we're having some slight technologic difficulties, and we've lost Peter for the moment. Oh, he's coming back right now.
Yeah.
All right.
There we go.
Peter, I just lobbed a softball at you, which is, why are you running for Congress again?
Well, I'm running because first of all, it's a very pivotal time in America. And secondly, I feel we have a do-nothing dysfunctional Congress, and it's a disservice to the American people. And, you know, I've always worked hard at working across the aisle to find bipartisan and sustainable solutions to the problems that we're facing, and I feel as though that's just not happening anymore. Make a difference.
Thanks, Peter. Why don't you talk about the pivotal time? What's so pivotal about this time?
Well, what's so pivotal is that, you know, there are so many issues that I think would make a significant difference depending on which direction people go in this election. Obviously, you know, most people, it seems at this point, have heard of Project 2025. And, you know, in the extreme nature of cutting Social Security and Medicare and doing away with overtime for workers and just so many other things that would be so incredibly harmful. But this isn't just like a potential that they might enact this agenda. I mean, my opponent's part of the Republican Study Committee that did, in fact, propose cuts to Medicare and Social Security. And, you know, people work their hard their entire lives, and to not be able to have the benefits that they've worked so hard to provide, this isn't a government handout. This is something people paid into their entire career. But there's so many other issues, trying to rebuild the middle class, whether, you know, tax policy is huge, whether or not we're going to, as Governor Evers and I did, focus on giving tax breaks to the middle class versus further cutting the corporate rates beyond even what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce asked for, or giving the top 1% a tax break. That makes a tremendous difference. Daycare, being able to make sure children in America can have a good start in life, very vital. During COVID, they passed the advanced child care credit, made a huge difference. It cut childhood poverty in half in this country. And with divided government, there's not been an effort to try and bring that back, but it's something, being a former Secretary of Revenue, I care deeply about. It's very hard for parents. And I'll tell you one statistic, Matthew, that nearly knocked me off my feet when I heard it, and it's absolutely true, is the fact that it now costs more for people to put their infants in daycare than it does their teenagers in a UW system or the vocational college system here in Wisconsin. And that's at a time when people can ill afford it. You know, they're at the start of their career often when they have children. And so it's so vital that, you know, we provide that kind of support for people, and that we ensure that daycares can stay open. The economists that work for me at the Department of Revenue said the number one thing we can do about workforce is to make sure that affordable and quality daycare is available for parents, and more people will go back to work. And I'll tell you, the first bill I will introduce in the Congress is when people first start to retire and they're working part-time, if they go over too many hours, they lose dollar for dollar off their Social Security. That's outrageous. Maybe that made sense a generation ago. I don't think it ever did, frankly, but it certainly doesn't make sense anymore given the demand we have for workforce and the fact that people have paid into this. And if they want to work longer hours, you know, bravo for them. They're helping the economy as well. So these are just some of the issues. I'm somebody that believes strongly in building the middle class. I'm for Buy American. I passed Buy American provisions at the state level and at the federal level when I was in Congress. And, you know, I believe in getting rid of these disastrous trade deals that have deindustrialized this country and, you know, diminished the middle class. And, you know, it's very important that we make it easier for people to join a union. Unions are the ones that generally have built up the middle class in this country and provided benefits for people. So that's why it's so pivotal.
You know, a lot of the issues you mentioned, Peter Barca, are issues that relate to workers' rights. And of course, I remember the valiant effort you made when you were minority leader in the assembly to beat back Act 10. And so I'm grateful to you for that history and leadership that you provided. But look, your opponent right now, Brian Steil, today is in Milwaukee fronting for Donald Trump, who would gut any labor protections that there are, who's against raising the minimum wage, who's anti-union through and through. And Brian Stiles from Janesville, where you had the GM factory, you had the UAW strong. I mean, I would think this contrast between you and your record and Brian Steil and his record on labor rights should be a dramatic one for the constituents in the 1st Congressional District.
Well, it certainly is. And one of the things I talk about on the trail, Matthew, is that, you know, what I learned when I was in the legislature during those awful Walker years for organized labor and for working people is that back then they told the private sector, don't worry, we're not after private sector unions. We're just after the public sector. And then
you're cutting in and out, unfortunately.
And then they told the building trades, they said, don't be worried, we're not after you. And then they got rid of prevailing wage a year and a half later. So, you know, there is no bottom to how far they might go. Very aware. And, you know.
Peter Barca, looking back on those Walker years, how do you make sense of it all, of this Walker counter-revolution we all had to live through?
Well, it's you know, basically that, you know, they are willing to go to the ultimate limit. That's where the extreme right wing is taking it now, you know, look at things like reproductive rights. I mean, you know, the idea that they ended now, you know, frankly, even birth control is at stake with this extreme Supreme Court that we have. IVF protections, they say, well, they don't want to do that. But there's a bill that Senator Gillibrand has. They could pass that bill tomorrow if they're serious about making sure IVF is protected. I mean, as if it isn't bad enough what they've already done and, you know, to take away freedoms for people. And that's just one other major issue that stands out and that we have to, you know, fight very aggressively against that kind of effort to take away people's rights.
Absolutely. I mean, I think this particular seat in this district has had a lot of attention played on it for quite some time. And I'm curious if, you know, if the new maps are playing an effect or how people are talking about things. What is, because I, you know, we've seen a lot of folks have made valiant efforts in that time and in that district. And curious of how you see your path to victory. Does it include, you know, momentum around maps, how people are thinking about districts think differently? What makes this particular campaign different and that actually there could be a shot at flipping it?
Well, certainly. And thank you, Angela, because it's very important that people understand that we finally have fair maps in Wisconsin. And this seat is dramatically different than when Brian Stow was first elected. And, you know, he had a plus 7% Republican district. And, you know, the irony is he really doesn't get around the district much. I'll tell you, half the people I talk to don't even know how to pronounce his name. They think it's Brian Steele instead of Brian Stile.
That's crazy.
Which surprises me. But I think when you have a plus 7% Republican district, and this is what I saw as the minority leader and Democratic leader in the legislature, is when, you know, when people have safe districts, they tend to, you know, not really cater to their constituents and go to bat for them. His offices, just as one example, when I was in Congress, we had offices in every corner of the district open from 9 to 5 every day. His offices are open 2 hours a week. It's absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen anything so pathetic in my entire life.
I can imagine you, if elected, would not do that and you would hold office hours for more hours in the district.
Well, of course, and I made sure my staff was available on a regular basis. The irony is they had huge battles in some places like Kenosha County, where he demanded that he be in the county administration building because he said he'd be more accessible. And then we come to find out how difficult it is for people because they go out there. His staff is only there. Not that I expect him. He's got to be in Washington, of course. But his staff is there 2 hours a week. So they're bottling up an entire office. They can meet in the lobby for 2 hours a week, for goodness sakes, and not take away taxpayer resources, you know, to serve people. It just absolutely is shocking to me, quite frankly.
Peter Barca, I'm wondering what you are making of the Harris Walz campaign right now.
Well, I mean, the biggest issue there is that there's just tremendous energy everywhere I go, you know, especially young people who were so pivotal in electing President Obama. I mean, they're extremely enthusiastic and they're out in force. We see a lot more volunteers coming forward. We see, you know, frankly, an uptick in our contributions on Act Blue and other social media because people, you know, they feel like we've got a very energetic team. And I mean, it may come back to haunt Nikki Haley, those words that she said during her race against Donald Trump, where she said, whichever party replaces her, you know, their 80-year-old potential president first will probably win the election.
Yeah, I hope she's right about that. Listen, what could you accomplish? What could the Democrats accomplish? What could Harris Walz accomplish if you win your race and Democrats get hold of the House of Representatives and keep the Senate? What big changes could people see in their lives every day?
Unfortunately, we have once again lost Mr. Barca. Hopefully he will be able to rejoin us in a moment.
Okay, I do want an answer to that question.
You know, he did talk about, you know, his first bill about folks that tend to be kicked off Social Security because they over, you know, they work too many hours and things like that. So definitely curious how he continues to dig into some of that, too.
Yeah. And it's interesting that he has felt the enthusiasm emanating from Harris Walz.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think young people, as he mentioned, are more exhilarated certainly in the case of my three kids, than they were before. I mean, Joe Biden, and I've said this before, but he was taking us over the cliff. I know he's done a good job in a lot of areas, but I don't think he could have gotten across the finish line, especially after that debate. I took a lot of grief for it when I said it right after sure. that debate, but that was the God's honest truth. And thank God for, you know, Nancy Pelosi and David Axelrod for pushing hard.
And I was going to say, too, I think it's important, and I'm very curious to just wonder how candidates are feeling the effects of the top of the ticket and how that's trickling down into their campaigns. Are they seeing more excitement there? I did hear at some point, I think it was earlier this week or last week, that there is a huge kind of contribution to support down ballot races from the campaign, from the Harris-Walz campaign. And so you start to hear them talking about it more. Even when Tim Walz was at, you know, Labor Fest, he was giving a shout out. He said, we got to send these people, you know, to D.C. and being able to talk about, you can't just elect the top of the ticket. You need to give them people that are able to reinforce their agenda. Because if you elect the top of the ticket, but you have no one in Congress to support you, you're not going to get far.
And I used to think that Tammy Baldwin was going to lead the presidential candidate. It still might happen. She might outpoll Harris here. But at this point, I think Harris is helping everybody.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I'm curious how the candidates experience it.
Yeah. So that's, and if Peter Barker reconnects, we'll get him after the break. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm sub-hosting here for Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show, and joined by Angela Lang, my co-host for the rest of the show. Actually, Maggie's going to have a little segment from 3 to 3:30, which will be a treat, too, on the worst states and best states to work. Wisconsin's not at the top of the best list, by far.
Unfortunately.
Back with you on the Maggie Dawn Show, all across the Civic Media Radio Network here in the state of Wisconsin. I'm joined by my co-host Angela Lang of Block, and we have Peter Barker back for this last segment of this half hour. Peter Barker is the former Assembly Speaker for the Dems in the legislature here in Wisconsin. He's now running against Brian Stile in the 1st Congressional District here in southern Wisconsin.
And it looks like we might have lost him.
We did lose him again.
So that, I think, okay, so there's a testimony, because when you are out traveling and on the campaign trail in the state of Wisconsin, that is bound to happen. And I think that just goes to prove that he's putting in the work. He's knocking doors. But also, I think that that shows, too, about one of the critical infrastructure needs. There are times where, you know, you go a little bit too far north and you have no reception. And what does that look like, and how people feel so isolated in some places and disconnected from the rest of the state? So, yeah, you know, this is unfortunate that we're not able to have him on as consistent, but I think it is, you know, part of the conversation and part of his race, I think, just playing out in real time.
Totally. I mean, and part of it is, you know, broadband in rural Wisconsin is very lousy.
Yeah.
And part of it is, you know, the grid is bad. And that's one of the things Biden's doing in the next few minutes in Westby, Wisconsin,
yeah.
talking about rural electrification, getting wind and solar in rural areas. I mean, it's just pathetic that things are so bad here.
I think there's something to be said about basic necessities and folks not at every corner of our state being able to access basic necessities. And I think that's one of the things that the Biden administration is trying to do, whether it's things around like broadband and internet access, or even it's just like another necessity is clean drinking water. And so if like we're going to talk about environmental issues, and sometimes, you know, people talk about the Biden administration and what they've done for the environment, but people are like, okay, there's these protections and policies, but what does that mean for me? That also includes getting rid of things like the lead laterals on the north side of Milwaukee. Again, having safe, healthy drinking water is something that I think rural folks can identify with as well, too. And so it's just it's interesting that whether it's broadband or access to clean drinking water, these are things that can actually unite us as a state despite the urban and rural divide.
And despite the Republican-Democratic divide, I know there is a very decent Republican who's just serving out the end of his term in the state Senate, Rob Coles, up in the Green Bay area, who worked really hard on this lead pipe issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I understood that he was furious at some of the business interests and the hardcore Republicans who are trying to water down, excuse the pun, the legislation he was putting forward, which was a bipartisan piece of legislation to fix the problem of lead in the pipes. Now, my wife's a pediatric nurse practitioner. She's been dealing with, she's retired now, but she always told me about the hazards of lead in the drinking water for kids.
And that puts them on the school-to-prison pipeline because they're being, you know, disruptive in class, and then boom, you know?
And, yeah, it was, it's just a terrible health hazard for kids. It causes brain damage and all other kinds of health hazards.
Yeah.
And it's just ridiculous that we can't give our kids clean, safe drinking water in the year 2024 in Wisconsin. I mean, we are not, you know, in the most remote third world country in the world here.
Exactly.
We're in the most advanced industrial country, the richest country ever, and we can't give people the most basic necessities, clean air, clean water. I mean, that's a disgrace.
It looks like we have Peter back, so let's see if we can squeeze out one more question, or more if we can.
Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I had asked right before we got disconnected, you know, what could you and a Democratic Congress and a Harris-Walz presidency accomplish for everyday people that would make a difference in their everyday lives?
Well, a tremendous amount. There's no question. I mean, first of all, you know, we can pass the PRO Act to make it easier for people to join a union. You know, we can reform these disastrous trade deals that we have negotiated, which have led to the deindustrialization of America. You know, we can protect and enhance programs like Social Security and Medicare, and obviously protect women's reproductive health decisions and keep the government out of those decisions, and so many other issues. Just across the spectrum, it'll make a tremendous difference.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say just really quickly, tell us about the district. Tell us about the people, the values, the culture, and how you aligned with that versus your opponent.
Well, it's a, you know, in a way, it's a microcosm of society because you have rural areas, you have urban areas, you have suburban area, you have agricultural interests, tourism. You know, it's, so it's a good microcosm, and but you know, for the most part, it's middle class people that work hard, that care deeply. It's a, you know, very much labor oriented type district. You know, we sadly don't have the two auto plants we once had anchoring both ends of the district, but we do still have, you know, many industrial plants, machine shops, and you know, so it's you know, middle class type district where people care deeply, work hard in their communities, or the communities in this district are generally very cohesive, a lot of community events, which are very energizing. I love going from community to community and participating in those events. They've been terrific, and it's been a wonderful summer.
Hey, Peter, I wish you all the best in your campaign. If someone's listening wants to help you out in your campaign, how do they get hold of you? How do they send you a donation? How do they volunteer? What's the best way to contact you?
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, there, our website is, you know, Barca, for Wisconsin, and they can email me at peter@barcaforwisconsin.com, and they'll definitely get a response. We do, you know, we have offices across the district, one in the South Milwaukee Oak Creek area, Kenosha, Janesville, Beloit, and where they can contact their local Democratic office, and they can direct them as well. We have yard signs out in every district now, and we certainly need people to knock on doors and people to make phone calls, and if they want to contribute, that'd be terrific too. We have an ActBlue link, and we just love voter participation. We've had a lot of volunteers, and we appreciate it enormously.
Well, that's great. That's Peter Barca. That's B-A-R-C-A. Peter Barca for Congress. Thanks so much for being our guest on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thank you. All the best, Angela and Matthew. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Right back at you. And we'll be back Actually, Maggie herself will be back for the next half hour here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. So stay tuned. While you're at it, leave the nightlight on inside the birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. While you're at it, leave the nightlight on inside the birdhouse in your soul. Not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul. While you're at it, leave the nightlight on. Not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only.